From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I will stop the rhetoric. I hope that you can as well. I think we can slow down with these gotcha votes that we've been seeing for many, many months so we can get to the business at hand.
The Democrats are saying no reforms, no reforms, just focus on, quote, budget, meaning when they say that, what they mean is governor support a tax hike.
While this crisis was avoidable, Governor Rauner has refused to put an end to the crisis. Every other governor that I have worked with has negotiated with the General Assembly in good faith to help the people of Illinois and to ensure that the people of our state did not needlessly suffer.
That's Speaker Michael Madigan on the House floor this week, just after a meeting with other legislative leaders and the governor. And I guess it didn't go too well. We also heard from Governor Bruce Rauner and House Republican leader Jim Durkin. Durkin says he's willing to cool it with the rhetoric. We'll talk about the happenings that don't seem to be moving us toward a budget agreement anytime soon. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and on our panel today, Charlie Wheeler, who runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in our State House Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Doug Finke, he's a State House reporter with Gatehouse Media. Doug, thanks for being on with us again.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Doug, I'll start with you. There was a meeting this week among the top players in state government. Didn't seem like it lasted that long, and do we know if anything was accomplished?
It lasted about an hour, as best anyone can tell. Unlike some other meetings that have been held, and there haven't been that many between the governor and four leaders, neither the governor nor any of the leaders came out and talked to the media afterwards. They all ducked out back doors, which in the somewhat perverse language reading of the general in the Capitol, some people took as possibly a good sign because for once nobody came out and started complaining about what did or did not happen at the meeting. We don't know for sure if anything was accomplished just based on that lack of anybody talking. However, the following day, Barbara Flynn Curry, who is Madigan's top floor leader in the House, mentioned at a House committee that budget personnel from all four caucuses and the governor's budget office were meeting on Thursday morning to discuss things. And that's, if they're getting together and at least discussing budgetary issues, that's always a good sign.
Yeah, I would take that as a good sign. Charlie, that's usually the way these budgets are often worked out, is staff gets together. It's not always the big folks, you know, sitting down at the table, but they do have to sign off on it. They do have to make the final decision, and some issues have to be worked out by them.
Yeah, in my experience as a reporter covering this stuff, usually it would be the governor and the four legislative leaders would set out kind of the broad parameters. There were individual lawmakers on the appropriations committees and in other important committees among the rank and file who would do some of the hard number crunching, aided by the staffs and by the Bureau of the Budget. They kind of informally were referred to as the budgeteers. And when all was said and done, there would be an agreement among the governor, the four legislative leaders, and that would be presented to the membership for a vote.
Well, Amanda Vinicky, is there any other rumblings you're hearing up there of maybe something that's in the works that maybe we could be inching closer towards some type of deal?
There is a lot of attention toward the rank and file legislators who, if you speak to some, say they're really and quite obviously have good reason to be frustrated. And so through those back channels, there do appear to be talks and an effort to bring forth some sort of plan that can be presented to leadership, a working group with this budget staff that Doug had mentioned. So it may just be that we have gotten to the point, and particularly as we are now midway through the month of April, and it is the end of this month that Chicago State University says it will have to close its doors, lay off all of its 930 employees, and all of the questions that are connected with what on earth might that mean. There might just be any sort of success through these back channels. I just do like to point out, however, that first of all, there was a kind of unofficial group of rank and file legislators who tried this before and were shot down with the loose plan that they had presented to Governor Bruce Rauner. The notion that the governor's office is aware of this now and may be taking a kinder view of things, given how long this impasse has gone on, that could happen. And I do want to get back to, Sean, to those comments by Madigan. And I there were some people, I think, that had raised eyebrows because, again, as Doug noted, we don't know what went on in the leaders' meeting. Nobody came out afterwards and talked. But it was a stark contrast, the Madigan comments, to those from the House Republican leader, Jim Durkin, and the following day during a floor debate from also the Senate Republican leader, Christine Rodonio, where it seemed as if they were, instead of the rhetoric that we often hear from them, and that is Democrats are responsible, this is all politics, and you hear anger in their voices at the other party, the Republicans, it seemed, took this more conciliatory tone of, hey, guys, let's work together. So maybe there was something to that in the meeting, and this working group hints to that. It seemed to me almost as if Madigan was getting some things off his chest and maybe letting his feelings be known and also rallying the Democratic masses. And really, those were very pointed remarks, and it was rare for Madigan to speak for a whole 10 minutes and in that tone about Bruce Rauner. He's been far more measured in the past.
Yeah, we were talking about that before the show went on a bit. It is rare for the speaker to show that type of, I guess you would call it frustration, possibly, whatever it was. It came out, and it came out publicly, and that's not something you usually hear from the speaker.
No, he's someone who is very reserved in his comments. He's very formal, I guess you would say, and he usually doesn't let his emotion show. That long, for him, that long speech struck me as being one born of frustration. And maybe part of what set him off was the fact that they had finally agreed we're all going to meet, and then just hours before the meeting was supposed to happen, the governor speaks to a bunch of business leaders and trashes Madigan and the Democrats. And as this was occurring, as the governor's comments were being reported, I'm thinking to myself, man, this isn't the right way to set up a meeting where you're going to try and work something out. The fact of the matter is, the governor seems like he's still in campaign mode. He actually was elected more than a year ago, so he doesn't need to be on the campaign trail. Now's the time where you temper your remarks and you try and be conciliatory and work something out. And I think Madigan,
you know, Charlie,
as they say, he let his frustration show.
I was just wanted to point out there that really, as you noted, this sort of talk from Bruce Rauner is what we've heard the entire time, as you noted, on the campaign trail, but really the entire time that he has been governor, that sort of campaign style, very much lashing out against Speaker Madigan and the Democrats and this kind of divisive tone that he takes. So it may have been, and if you contrast the Rauner speaking points with the speech that Madigan made, while Madigan was pointed in, I think, his criticism of Rauner, in that he said this crisis was avoidable and the governor is prolonging it. That was really the only comment, I believe, that was direct in mentioning Governor Rauner. He instead talked about, I've compromised with other governors from both parties. We've had disagreements. I even cooperated with Rod Blagojevich, and you all know my differences that I had with him, pointing out, of course, that it was Speaker Madigan who was campaign chair for Blagojevich's second term and helped him get reelected. But still, that was part of the Madigan speech, and it is really a sharp contrast with the way that he went about criticizing the governor versus the campaign-style way that Rauner criticizes Madigan. And there is a lot of talk that part of what the governor says when he's out and about and this public fury that he lets loose on Democrats is what has been why Madigan isn't all that keen on meeting with him and working together. And I think there are a couple of sides to take from that. On one hand, you say, yeah, I don't blame him. How do you trust a governor that you is friendly with you in a meeting and you think you have an agreement with and then leaves and says those sort of things. And at the other hand, I know when I asked, for example, Senator Redonio about that, she said, this is politics. You can't have a thin skin. And when you think about all of the campaign pamphlets and Millers that Madigan has signed off on for Democrats, he is welcome. He all the time is throwing out criticism against others in that venue. And so there is, I think, the other side of it that says, okay, get over it. He's governor. That's the tone he wants to take. You still need a budget. And what is depending, all the people in the state that are depending on you don't really care if you are a public figure taking a lashing from the governor.
Doug, let me go back to something that I hate to hearken back to the Blagojevich administration too much, but I don't think we've seen trust down to the level that it is now, as low as it is right now, since that time. And of course, at that time, we saw something that we hadn't seen before, these so-called memorandums of understanding. It was these written agreements saying the governor basically will keep his word or somebody else will keep their word on something. Is that possibly where we're heading to? Is the distrust that low at the Capitol right now?
That is certainly my sense of things, and as long as you brought those things up, I've covered this place since the last year of that Jim Thompson was in office, and it was not until we got to Blagojevich that I recall anyway that the lawmakers had to resort to these memorandums of understanding, that they felt they had to put all these promises in writing that they worked out behind closed doors. And yes, it seems to me that that's the way the relationship is, certainly between Madigan and the governor's office.
Well, that seems to
me,
Doug.
I think the difference being that Democrats got off the reservation with Rod Blagojevich as well, and that is not the case with Bruce Rauner. While Republicans, there are corners of frustration, the Republican Party legislators are very much still with Bruce Rauner.
Sure, and I understand that, but let me get to
the big difference there.
The point I was trying to make, though, is the fact that if it comes down to having to put every one of these promises in writing, the governor will release money for this or that, whatever. This seems like this could take a long time to work something out here because, I mean, forget the fact that they have some major issues structurally in the budget to deal with, but then you have all these other little agreements that might have to be worked out. I mean, it seems to me that that could be very hard to get done anytime soon.
Well, I would only point out that we've been 10 months without any progress anyway, so what's going to be a few more days?
Let me move on to something else here.
Let me add, though, that when Madigan says he's worked with other governors, that is very much true. He was very supportive of, for example, of Jim Eggers' initiative to try and do a tax swap and trade income tax, state income tax dollars for local property taxes for schools. He got that bill out of the House with very little Republican support because the Republican leadership was opposed to it. He worked with Thompson on issues. He worked with George Ryan. He has a long record. Now, in those years, early on in the legislative session, there was this kind of back and forth and never as caustic as it's been with Rauner and his minions. But there was disagreement, but then along would come April in recent years or along in my day when the session ran to the end of June, you would get to May, and they'd kind of agree to disagree on certain things, and then they'd sit down and say, okay, now we have to do the job, and they'd get it done.
Let me move on to something else here that could play a role, we don't know, and possibly resulting in some type of end to this impasse. There's some discussion out there, and that is Attorney General Lisa Madigan, which is, she is the Speaker's daughter, of course. And there's some discussion, Amanda, about the fact that she might use a recent court ruling to try to go to court and possibly stop paying state employees. That could lead to some pressure point that might force everyone's hand. What's the latest? What are you hearing on that?
I think we're hearing really a lot of rumor. There was an interview with WFLD TV that statements taken to believe that the Attorney General's office was for sure going to do this, and there had been some reporting to that nature. And yet the Attorney General's office still issues the same statement that says the case is under review and has made no decision following the requirement. The Supreme Court says that you need an appropriation in order to make good on contracts and pay wages. So really, we're at that same juncture where perhaps she will go and do that, and that would lift this order from the St. Clair County judge that is allowing state employees to get paid. But number one, that could take a while if she does it. And two, that is a big political risk for Lisa Madigan to go and do that, because already we are seeing Governor Bruce Rauner basically lash her now in public for even the suggestion that that might be. He's painting himself as the savior of state employees, the one who's wanting to make sure that they are getting paid for their work, he says. And we can be sure to see a whole lot of that if that is the track that Madigan goes.
Does anybody see what the reasoning would be to try to do that, though? I mean, it seems to me like it might create even a bigger problem, especially for state workers who are trying, the unionized state workers who are still trying to work out a deal with Governor Bruce Rauner's administration, that maybe they could be left twisting in the wind if a ruling went against them.
I guess the rationale behind it would be that the court has said that absent an appropriation, you can't spend this money. And in the dissent, Justice Thomas Kilbride warned that this could have far-reaching implications, although the final paragraph of the decision attempted to very narrowly say, now, this ruling only applies to this particular case, this particular set of facts, and in a sense, all Supreme Court rulings only apply directly to the subject matter at hand. But the precedent that's set out is something that can be applicable in the future. So the precedent seems to be you can't pay salaries without an appropriation. And so,
the question is if you need an appropriation, pass an appropriation. I mean, the legislature has passed appropriations for just recently for universities, for community colleges, for MAP grants, for all sorts of other things. They've done that as they've gone along. So if the court says you have to have an appropriation to pay state employees, what would prevent them from passing an appropriation to do that?
Oh, they could pass the appropriation. The question is, if they pass the appropriation, will the governor sign it or not? They've sent a number of bills to the governor, spending bills that have been vetoed, and the governor's rationale is we don't have the money. I'm not sure if you go ahead and do the state payroll. What's the state payroll? Maybe $6 billion, something like that, for everybody in all agencies and departments. If you were to pass a payroll bill, is the governor going to sign it?
Well,
where's the money going to come from?
Based on him saying that he's the defender of state workers, all of a sudden, yeah.
Undercuts his argument that the reason he vetoed the earlier appropriation for higher ed and MAP grants, and the reason that he's likely to veto the one that they sent to him earlier this week, is we don't have the money.
I don't know the consistency on any of the sides. strong point.
Good point.
All Doug. No, really what you have, Attorney General Madigan, why she would perhaps put her political life on the line for this, knowing that she's going to be coming under attacks from Governor Rauner, were she to do this, would be because she said previously that this reliance on the judges, she hasn't said it in quite this fashion, not a direct quote, but that this reliance on the judges to do the work of a legislature and appropriating state money is not what the Constitution is intended. So in terms of, of living up to what the law is supposed to be and being the state's top attorney, that might be why she would take this route. And also, perhaps is all that you were just discussing, Doug and Charlie, in terms of what would the governor do and how does that equate with his other positions and the notion that Illinois is running a deficit? Well, this could, in a sense, call his bluff. We've talked before about how really the governor has managed, and because of all of these court orders and such, there is no budget, but the shutdown that we'd predicted initially never really happened for that whole host of reasons. And really, in large part, that is because of this particular court case that allows state employees to get paid. So if both sides do stick to their guns on that and state workers are out of a job, and then you would presumably have people really noticing, your average citizen that is putting state politics on the back burner of their busy lives would perhaps awaken, and that could be what would force the agreement, force an appropriation, and truly, because Illinois doesn't have enough money in the bank, then lead to that talk of the revenue side.
Well, it seems to me, too, if this is what it takes to get it done this year, it does not bode well for the next few years ahead with Bruce Rauner as governor and the Democrats. You know, to me, the way to get this done is going to have to be a sit-down agreement. And possibly, you know, there's been discussion about two-year budgets and things like that. Maybe there is some more longer-term agreements, but it seems to me this is not the way to go because I think it could lead to some real unintended consequences. That being said, we'll see how that plays out. I do want to leave some time to talk, too, that the governor did offer up a plan to fund schools. He talked about that before, putting a little bit more money into school funding, into the formula. There is a plan at the Capitol that is starting in the Illinois Senate that is a little bit more of a radical plan. It would change the way that schools are funded and give more money to the poorer schools. Under the governor's plan, kind of does a bit more of the opposite. It gives more money into the formula, which, you know, people will say the rich get richer, maybe the poor get poorer, things like that. Any idea that we're anywhere closer on a school funding agreement, along with all the other issues on a state budget?
I wouldn't say that there were anywhere closer. A bill proposed by Senator Andy Menar of a Democrat from Bunker Hill got out of a Senate Executive Committee this last week. But even some of the Democrats on the committee said that they were either voting present or they were voting to put it out on the floor. But before it went any further than that, they wanted to see how that revised formula would affect the school districts in their individual Senate districts.
And those numbers are not available, right, at this point?
They are not available at this point. Menar said he has asked the Board of Education to produce them, but so far they're not there. And that's oftentimes what these kind of funding reform proposals come down to, is do the school districts in my legislative district win or lose? And if most of them lose, it's going to be a lawmaker is going to be hard pressed to vote for it either party.
And when you think about it, the idea is to put more money into the poorer schools, the local school districts that have a very low tax base. They don't have a big shopping center, they don't have a big manufacturing site, they don't have a nuclear power plant, and therefore they don't have the property tax base to generate the kind of revenues that districts with those types of infrastructure do. And so we're going to channel more money to those poor districts. But if the size of the pie is the same, when you channel more money to the poor, then the better off get less. And that's where the problem is. And every time we revamped the formula, well, we haven't done it that often, but the last time we did it in 97, we also increased the size of the pie. And we also provided, as I believe Senator Menar's bill does, that if you're a school district and you're going to get less under the new formula next year than you did this year, we'll make up the difference so you don't lose. But that requires additional dollars, too. And that's the problem. You can't really solve this problem without putting more resources into the schools. And you probably can't do that unless you cut deeply some other program or you provide additional revenue through raising taxes.
And there's so many other places that if you raise taxes that also want to see additional money, that schools might have to get in line.
Might have to get in line, although it is very much a priority of Governor Bruce Rauner. And that is where, even as he's crying deficit elsewhere this year, wanting to give $55 million more to schools, and on top of that, some $75 million more to early childhood, this is clearly a priority for him. And the entire argument about school funding has the attention of legislators and is seen also as another one of these areas where could it be something that breaks the impasse, or is this going to be the next emergency should Senate President John Cullerton follow through on comments that said he's, unless the school funding formula gets changed, he doesn't want schools to be funded, sort of throwing this hostage something that people want and is regularly done in order to bring about change mentality that Governor Bruce Rauner has employed in using it back on the governor's office.
Well, let me ask about when it comes to school funding, it is such a complicated thing. And I think what Charlie was talking about, it's so difficult to work out an agreement because every part of the state can raise different issues. You can have schools in one county that get money under a plan and then schools in that same county that lose, they're just down the road. It seems to me like it's going to be hard to do this. If they can't even agree on a budget, I think a budget's easier to put together than it is to change the school funding formula. I mean, Doug, you've been around a long time. You've seen other efforts on this. I know Emil Jones had made a big push when he took over in the Illinois Senate that he wanted to change the funding formula, the old tax swap idea. Again, it just sits there and it's talked about a lot. And at the end of the day, it gathers dust.
They've been talking about revising the formula and increasing the state share of education funding for as long as I've been covering this place. And, yeah, it is enormously complicated. And whether they could get it done in the remaining 6-8 weeks of the what's left of the scheduled spring session, I think would be a real question mark, not to mention the fact that so far the House is has been running their own task force on this issue and has not given any real indication that they're interested in taking up anything that comes out of the Senate, at least so far.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. Shirley Wheeler, let me start with you.
Well, the Department of Employment Security came out with the information that Illinois added almost 15,000 jobs in the month of March. But unfortunately, our unemployment rate also went up by 0.1% to 6.5%. And how that happens is that even though we've created more jobs, more people have started looking for work. More people have entered the workforce than the number of new jobs that have been provided. And we still lag behind the nation on that count.
Amanda?
General election is coming up, and that is an opportunity to change the Constitution, and we are beginning to see action when it comes to constitutional amendments. Expect some perhaps coming up on Speaker Michael Madigan's push to had a surcharge on income over $1 million. He's also out with another constitutional amendment proposal that would really put the onus more on the state to be the primary funder of education. And we saw this week activity on a constitutional amendment that would do away with the lieutenant governor's office.
And Doug?
Well, the Senate gave final approval this last week to another sort of a piecemeal approach to the budget, a $3.9 billion plan that authorizes spending for community colleges, universities, MAP grants, and a variety of human service agencies. The governor said he will veto the thing because there's no actual cash attached to this. It's just spending authority, and the state, frankly, doesn't have the money to spend.
Well, we will be back next week to talk more about it. We'll leave it there for today. Members of our broadcast include Shirley Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, also in our Statehouse Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, and Gatehouse Media's Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search WUIS on iTunes. Our production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.